City. It's your man, Big Pat, the voice of your Charlotte Hornets, and you're listening to the All Hornets Podcast Network, presented by Sports Illustrated.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're back for another episode of the All Hornets Podcast Network. And after a week off, substitute in, we have Chase Whitney joining me back here. Chase, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be back. A little bit of a hiatus from podcasting over the what seems like a lengthy summer with no basketball. So it's nice to be back on the mic here.
Well, apart from Kai Jones's two games for the Bahamas, you've not missed anything.
True, true.
That's literally nothing has happened since the last time that we spoke, I don't think. It's been a slow couple of weeks, but how have you been filling the time here? Have you started knitting? Like, have you picked up any summer hobbies? What's Chase doing to fill the void of basketball?
So I've planted a full garden out back of my house. I've gotten some goats. I've become fully self-sustaining in the last couple. No, I'm kidding. I haven't done any of that.
I was literally about to be like, you've got goats?
Yeah, no, I know how to milk them and everything. No, I mean, maybe someday, but I've been doing the complete opposite. I've just been sitting a little bit of both, mixing some other sports and TV shows. I watch my New York Yankees quite a bit. I watch like NASCAR on Sundays. Been getting ready for the NFL season coming up in a little, like a week and a half or so from when we're recording this at the end of August. I'm very excited for that.
Have you done your fantasy drafts yet for the NFL?
I'm doing one like literally as we speak right now. So
you're drafting.
I'm multitasking. All right, right on the pod, real quick. Dalvin Cook or Joe Mixon?
I had Joe Mixon last year. I really liked him, so I could Joe Mixon.
Yeah, me too. All right, that's who I'm gonna go with too. Yep. All right. I feel like he's a lot more.
I thought you were gonna be like run past me.
It was my second one. I got Jonathan Taylor on the first one. It was before we started recording, to be fair. So
now, Chase,
to be transparent,
you need to realize the audience we have right now. All right. Did you have the first pick overall, and did you pick Jonathan Taylor?
No, I was the second to last pick in the first round. So I think
you were able to pick Jonathan Taylor.
It's a small league. I think there were six people. I got him fifth. I think it was like Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson.
Jonathan Taylor is like going one or two in like most drafts.
Oh no, I'm picking fourth. Never mind. But yeah, so yeah, he did fall a little bit, but yeah.
That's still impressive. Yeah. Well, good luck with your multitasking. I would not be doing that. I'm showing the podcast right now. I have my sheet of rankings right here for my draft, which I've got this weekend, and I'm traveling down to see some friends in Essex and in the UK to go do the fantasy draft this weekend. So I take this stuff too seriously. I can't be multitasking doing this. But anyway, so you've been how are the Yankees doing? Give us the 30 seconds on the Yankees.
All right. So they, up until April, May, June, 2 weeks of July, one of the best baseball teams I've like literally ever witnessed. Aaron Judge hit his 51st home run on August 30th last night. So he's probably going to break the non-steroid, which, you know, not that that matters to me, but he's probably going to break the non-steroid user single season home run record of 61. He's got like a month and a half to do that. But as a team right now, they've kind of sucked for like a month and a half. So I'm hoping they can turn that around before the playoffs. But I imagine a lot of people that listen to this podcast are Braves fans, and the Braves are like the team with the, that has been like flipping places for best record, like fourth or fifth best record in the league with the Yankees for the last week or so. So we've we're a little neck and neck battle here. Not that it matters because it's a different NL and AL, but still.
Well, I hope you Yankees can turn it around.
I appreciate it.
I hope the record is broken for that thing that you said.
We're going for it. So
we've exhausted my baseball knowledge already. We've been speaking for 2 minutes, and I'm literally already like feeling uncomfortable. So
how have you been filling up the time with the summer? I mean, I know you had a busy June, July period, but what about the last month or so?
You know what? This is going to sound niche, right? But a lot of track and field, to translate it. I call it athletics, from the American.
Definitely niche.
Because there was the World Athletics Championships, which is in Oregon in the U.S., which was terribly attended, by the way. Crowds, USA, disappointed in you. I was very disappointed with lack of crowds. Then you had the Commonwealth Games, which is essentially all the countries that the UK used to be part of our empire, now come together for like a mini Olympics. But so it's like the South Africa's, Australia's, et cetera, et cetera. And then after that was European Championships. So that was like 3 weeks in a row. There was like major competitions. So that was good. I went to the Commonwealth Games and I saw, what did I see? I saw boxing, beach volleyball, rhythmic and artistic gymnastics. That was with work, actually, that one. Okay. I saw other stuff as well. I'm blanking. Badminton. We saw hockey, field hockey, that is. So I've been to a bunch of live sport, which has been great. Went to cricket, England test match the other day. There's been a lot. And then we've had the Premier League started back up, what, three weeks ago. So I've been watching my Manchester United team lose 4-0 to Brentford, lose to Brighton, and then somehow just beat Liverpool out of the blue. It's been a confusing start for Man United. I'm not allowing myself to get excited after two wins because there's still a lot of work to come. But I just got to the point. I don't know if you ever got to this team like I don't even care if they win. I just want to like enjoy watching my team play. And for the first two games of the season, I just sat down and I just sat there swearing incessantly at the television about guys just passing it to the other player and them scoring the box. It just wasn't enjoyable and really tainted my enjoyment at the start of the Premier League season. But if they're picking up, then that should hopefully be a little better.
So I know probably about as much about soccer or football, I apologize, as you do about baseball. So why are they bad? I thought they were really good. Don't they have Ronaldo?
Imagine the Lakers after Kobe tore his Achilles. That's what Man United is right now. It's like big name, like have like a great player, but like actually are just not good.
It's just not what it's supposed to be. Yeah,
okay. They have got a very,
I see what you're saying.
They've got a new exciting manager, Erik ten Hag. He's Dutch. He takes no shit. I love it. Like he's like proper stern and serious and like hates journalists. I quite enjoy it.
Right, there we go.
So I'm hopeful about him, but you're always hopeful about a new coach generally, aren't you? Like no matter freaking who it is. So, I mean, they can't defend, they can't keep the ball, and they struggle to score. Other than that, they're
I was going to say, other than like 98% of playing soccer, they're all right. But the new coach will whip them into shape. I'm hoping for you.
We'll see. But we do have a list of things to catch up on. We only have 2 more weeks until training camp starts and almost, like a month, 5 weeks or so until we get to see some actual basketball, which will be great. As much as I've enjoyed watching the Bahamas play FIBA, I'm very much looking forward to getting some Hornets basketball back. And on the podcast today, we're talking about an exciting new announcement. Ooh, that'd be interesting. We're going to talk a little bit about some Montrezl Harrell news, the part two of the fan survey that I published earlier this week, PJ Washington's contract extension, and looking at the Hornets over under and having a quick discussion about that. So a lot to touch on in the podcast, but we're not deep diving any of these topics really. We're just touching base on a few things. You know, that I didn't see the reason to deep dive right now, because you deep dive and then it's like 5 weeks, you're like, oh well, now everything has changed because there's actually been basketball training and games and it's much clearer, and that sounds stupid. So we're not deep diving yet, but we're touching through some things. But first, as I alluded to, we've got an announcement for the All Hornets Podcast Network. And some of you who are aware might have noticed some ads coming into our podcast recently. But now we are proud to announce that we've joined the Basketball Podcast Network, which is a podcast network. We're the Charlotte Hornets podcast for that network. And they're a great network. They've got a podcast for every single NFL, every single NHL team. They're growing the basketball side. I think they've got about 20 out of 30 at the moment. And what that means for you is you're going to be getting a shiny new logo very soon, which Chase hasn't even seen yet, which I might tease you this live on air at some point. But we're going to get a shiny new logo. We will have some ad reads from DraftKings, promo code TBPN. Just you'll hear the advert later, but we'll just get a sneak one in there. We also, in September, some adverts from Raycon earbuds, which they've sent me a pair and I can already recommend. Very nice pair of earbuds. And then also we'll just be having some guests on from other podcasts on the network. We've already had Dave King on for the Suns to discuss some DeAndre Ayton potential moves back in the offseason. We had a Brett Siegel come on from the Fast Break on an episode of The Stinger. So we're going to be tapping into a bunch of knowledge. So we just want to say a big shout out to the Basketball Podcast Network. It's great to be part of the team. What we're also looking to build into this season is a couple of like live streams, maybe some for trade deadline, for the draft, maybe for kind of particularly big games, playoff games, maybe, hopefully. So we've got some other benefits at our disposal on our end too, which will make things like live streaming a better experience. So we're really excited to join the podcast network. And you look out for more in this space. But for now, let's move on to Montrezl Harrell. There was an update today from Adrian Wojnarowski that Montrezl Harrell, who had originally had felony charges for marijuana trafficking, had them reduced to a misdemeanor possession in Madison County in Kentucky. Essentially, his charge will be expunged from his record after 12 months if Harrell gets in no further legal trouble. So good news for Montrezl Harrell. Well done to Montrezl Harrell's lawyer for working out whatever he did. I guess we should talk about if this affects Montrezl Harrell's return to the Charlotte Hornets. What are your thoughts, Chase?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I certainly think it doesn't affect it negatively. Like I don't think that it necessarily makes him, you know, more likely to come back, because the Hornets have a lot of bigs now after drafting Mark. Theoretically, Kai with that 1 year of development is going to be able to play a role in the rotation. You got Nick Richards there, who is also going to be battling for minutes. They kept Mason Plumlee, JT Thor, PJ Washington. There's a long list of, you know, 6'8 to 6'11 guys that would love minutes on the Charlotte Hornets. So I don't know if there's necessarily room for him, because he's not going to demand a minimum contract. It'd probably be something closer to the MLE anyway, but I think there is at least a slight chance that he comes back. I think just because he was a solid player, he's a veteran, would be just increase the amount of depth that they have, which, you know, it doesn't hurt to have like a lot of guys that you're juggling between for your rotation. So I don't know if there's a large chance he comes back, but non-zero, I would say.
I mean, I think it's pretty unlikely. But if he did come back, I'd actually be really disappointed, because I think if you're bringing Harrell back, you're essentially saying that, like, the young bigs that you've drafted in Mark Williams, Kai Jones, maybe Nick Richards, like they are not going to be in the rotation or have even less chance, or you view him as a power forward and he takes minutes away from Jalen McDaniels and JT Thor. So I'd be pretty disappointed just for the young guys on the roster if he were to come back. I think that, you know, his style is very much like, it's no doubt that, like, it shouldn't be forgotten what Harold did for the team last year. He was physical. He brought energy. He helped the offense. Like, the offense was in a massive rut and what they traded for Harold, and he was a big reason for that. And he had really good chemistry with LaMelo Ball. But you look at the things that Steve Clifford values: size for position, defensive rebounding, defensive versatility, the ability to stretch the floor, and like, don't crash the glass, don't foul, don't turn the ball over. Montrezl Harrell, I feel like if Cody Martin is the perfect Steve Clifford player, I feel like Montrezl Harrell is the anti-Steve Clifford player. And I just don't know how he would want Harrell to be part of it. Like, I know, like, more bodies is better sometimes, but it's like, especially with this hanging over him as well, I don't think it helps the situation, but I'd be pretty shocked personally.
Yeah, I mean, it would definitely surprise me, especially at this point, like so late in the offseason too. And this has been something I've been thinking about for like a week or two. Like, it was originally prompted by a tweet from Keith Smith, the Celtics blog and Spot Track. He tweeted out the amount of open roster spots that each team has, essentially after the Kevin Durant trade saga was over. Yep. Other than teams that have also been mired in trade sagas, which is basically like the Jazz, the Knicks, the Nets, and I think that's it. The Hornets have the most open roster spots in the league. Like, they don't even have all their guaranteed spots filled, and they have one Exhibit 10 or training camp deal that's been signed so far, which is, it's a very, very low number for a team that's not really like in flux right now. Like, there's not like three players on the Hornets that are about, like, they're trying to be traded or anything like that.
Well, I think the team's in complete flux.
Well, I mean, the team as a result of like one or two guys, like, it's not like they're like, oh, we don't know what we're doing with, like, you know, like LaMelo or PJ or whatever. Like, I feel like they're probably not trying to trade these guys right now. So,
I think that's what I mean. I just think the Hornets are in a position right now where, like, we're not signing anyone, we're not doing anything, like, until we just have some clarity on this Bridges situation. How is it going to go? Like, they can't even project their salary cap right now. They don't even have any idea where the salary cap is going to be because there's so many different variables of how this could play out. If he's on the roster and his qualifying offer is, he comes back and signs a new deal. If he's not on the roster at all because he's, you know, in jail, and essentially then he would be cleared altogether, and then they could use cap space. So I think there's so many variables here. I think that's the reason for the open roster spots. And it is a shame because, again, it's the Hornets are now going to be at the back of the queue for these undrafted guys. I imagine there's a few who they've got waiting, you know, for the September 7th when the next court date is, or the preliminary hearing is, for Miles Bridges. I'm sure they've got a few guys, like maybe Kemba Walker and Isaiah Thomas, although I think Kemba Walker might still not have even been released yet by Detroit, kind of waiting for some clarity there and before they make a signing. But yeah, to recap on Harrell, I think both of us would be very surprised if Harrell were to be back, just with the investment in the front court this summer with the new coaching staff. But I guess if Miles were to be gone off this roster, maybe there's a world where they think, oh, well, we could play Harrell at power forward. But, like, I don't like him at power forward with anyone other than, like, maybe PJ. Because at least PJ then can – I mean, who would even be the power forward? I don't know.
I was going to say, and then at that rate, is he even the power forward?
Yeah. Like, but I still just – because I don't think the Hornets are going to be a good playoff team this year. I don't quite know what they're going to be pushing for. I'd just rather – see what we've got in the younger players and give them the opportunity than play Harrell on a 1 year, $8 million contract or something, which he's probably going to be looking for. So, okay, that's Montrezl Harrell. let's move on to our fan survey part two, which I posted over on siohornets.com. And for those of you who listened to the episode with Eric, we talked about part one, some of the kind of things that surprised us. We're just going to touch, kind of take one question and one vote each, and we're going to talk about what surprised us in part two, which you can go find on All Hornets SI. So Chase, I will defer to you. I'll let you go first. What do you want to talk about? What jumped out to you when you were looking at these results?
All right. So, and credit to you for conducting this survey as well. So there's a lot of very informative answers here from the Hornets fans and the population that all these questions were posed to. But the one that stood out the most to me, I think, was who was everyone's least favorite former Bobcat / Hornet? And the group was Nick Batum, Frank Kaminsky, Dwight Howard, Adam Morrison, Lance Stevenson, Byron Mullins, and Tyrus Thomas. And Nick Batum received 46% of the vote. Second was Frank Kaminsky. Third was Dwight Howard. And they were the only three that were over 10%. And Kaminsky had 19, Howard had 12. So Nick got basically half of the votes. And then the rest was split between the other six players. So clearly he is taking the majority of the ire, or drawing the majority of the ire from Hornets fans right now, which, as you notice in the, or noted in the analysis below, is likely influenced by recency bias, because Kaminsky deserves a little bit more of a little bit higher percentage there. I don't know if anybody noticed that pun. If you did, my Venmo is open. Any amount that you want to send me is fine. But Frank definitely deserves like a little bit more than 19% if Nick is going to get 46%. All Nick did was sign on the dotted line. You know what I mean? Like that's the big problem, was just the fact that how much money he made. There are other players on this list just kind of weren't like even taking up like large amounts of the cap space, and also were not good and were you know, or drafted highly, or were just, you know, not good in the locker room, like right off the bat, or, you know, all sorts of things that are probably worse than just like taking up a lot of cap space.
The other thing with Nick is he had
five triple doubles in his first year with the Hornets. Yeah, he was a good player.
He had a fantastic first year, which has obviously led the Hornets to re-sign him. He had a fantastic first season with Kemba, and he was essentially like that second ball handler. So he had a good season in Charlotte. He even got some All-Star buzz that year. I remember it. He had a good first year in Charlotte. He got injured. Okay. In, I think, the year after maybe signing the big contract, he got quite a severe injury, essentially out for the entire season. So that definitely put him back. He then also kind of got benched, essentially, under when Borrego came to town, and he wanted to play more of the younger guys. And the other reason I think he got voted is because the Hornets are still suffering from him now, which isn't his fault that, like, Michael Jordan and Mitch Kupchak decided to stretch him to sign Gordon Hayward. But I think fans have, you know, it's the most recent one of these guys who's failed, but then also it's still having that negative impact now. So I think that's why, like you say, Batum was selected. I mean, for these other guys, I agree with you. Frank Kaminsky was just like, I just thought he was going to be a disaster from day one. And unfortunately, I was proved right. And like, I just never really felt, I don't know. I've got some of my own issues with Frank, some of the social media stuff, some of the interactions I had with him. Less said about those, the better. Dwight Howard, I think, is a bit harsh, 12%. I mean, Dwight played one season in Charlotte, and like, if you look, the numbers were pretty good. Like, he played pretty regularly, and he disappeared. He didn't massively have a negative impact. They essentially turned, was it the Mozgov contract into him, or was that the Bambo? I think it was the Mozgov contract into Dwight Howard, which, you know, he wouldn't have played at all. So I think the ones that should be probably like higher, the most highest out of all these, I think is Tyrus Thomas. The guy who like tried to assault.
I was thinking that was an underrated one.
Yeah, he's the one who tried to assault the head coach, Paul Silas, and Paul Silas had like push him up against a locker. He needed to get restrained by teammates. The guy who like the Hornets traded a future first round pick for, and then they re-signed him to a big free agency deal, and he was just like checked out so freaking early. like just did not apply himself to get better in any particular way. I think Tyrus Thomas, like Lance, you could probably say struggles. Like this isn't necessarily just like who, if someone struggles, you don't always like dislike someone. Like players can struggle all the time and they can still be likable. Frank Kaminsky and Tyrus Thomas were just unlike, I don't know who anyone who's like, after they were gone being like, I always liked Tyrus. I thought Frank, I think he would have worked out in Charlotte. And then with Frank, you also got the opportunity cost, right? 4 first round picks from Boston that they offered so that they could take Justice Winslow. And that is also tied to Frank, which isn't his fault. But I mean, still, you just look at what you got instead of those first round picks and you think how brighter the future could have been if they'd made that move. Okay, moving on. I'm going to pick another question, which was, who is your next favorite player, essentially, after LaMelo Ball? Which, before the summer, I'm pretty sure would have been Miles Bridges overwhelmingly. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I would. Yeah. Yeah. If you had posed the same question, he probably would have gotten over 50% of the vote.
I agree. I think he would have absolutely smashed it. So it's why I wanted to ask the question, because I was kind of like, who's the next guy who fans gravitate to now? And I was kind of surprised that Terry Rozier, 41%. I guess it kind of makes sense just for like, he scores a lot of points and he's been on the roster a somewhat good amount of time. So he is like a logical answer. But I'm surprised that PJ Washington wasn't maybe higher. He was down 18%. You know, a guy that the Hornets drafted and developed and has kind of taken some steps each year and done whatever the team asked. I know he's been maddeningly inconsistent. I'm missing
maddeningly. That's the Yankees.
Yes, fan. I'm missing some letters. That's why. Maddeningly inconsistent. Is that right? Okay, I'm just going with that.
Been like 2 weeks since we've done like, or a week.
I know you can. Podcast, I mean, so. The people haven't even heard the other edits out in the podcast before this point. There but we're leaving this all in. So,
all right.
So were you shocked Rozier was first? Did you think PJ would be any closer to him?
I did think PJ would be closer, but I figured Terry would at least run away with it in some way. But you know, 41-18 is, I mean, fairly similar to the split between Nick and Frank Kaminsky, but I figured it'd be a little closer than that.
Let's fast forward to the end of the season. Who do you think will be the answer to this question at the end of the season? If you had to bet money on one player, would it be still for Terry to be the guy?
I think so. Because even if he doesn't play quite as well, I think a lot of people will still, you know, appreciate like the veteran spark that he has and like the leadership presence that, you know, I mean, he's basically like the only guy doing that now. Because I mean, outside of LaMelo, you know, the best players on this team are all, theoretically, the best players on this team are all pretty young, or just not in a position to be like, all right, guys, like follow my lead, like I'll carry you out of this, you know, fourth quarter hole or bad stretch that we're going through, or something in the way that Terry is. So I could see it going down. If like maybe Mark Williams like ends up starting and is really good and he rockets his way up this list, but I would be very surprised if it's not still Terry at the end of the year, especially given the percentage split that we're at now.
I think the other thing Terry has is like a bit of an alpha personality, doesn't he?
Exactly.
Like he's very much like a leader of the team.
Exactly.
He speaks to the media a lot. He speaks with authority, and like you hear guys like Mark Williams speak, and he just like he's a rookie, like but he's not got to the stage, I think, where he's comfortable enough to necessarily be completely relaxed with maybe the fans and the media, and that will come. But right now, I don't think fans get to see maybe or like the great side of the personality that Mark has. But hopefully that will come out in the season and we get to see that as he gets more comfortable. It was really interesting doing the fan survey. It's something I'm going to try and bring back to do on an annual basis, because I think it's an interesting exercise to kind of post some some questions out there, especially in August when it's quiet. All right, let's take a break here. We are going to hear from our friends at DraftKings, and then we're going to come back after the break and talk about a possible PJ Washington rookie extension. So we'll catch you after the break. College football is back. It's time to enjoy the tradition and the fun from the great offers at DraftKings Sportsbook. Use promo code TBPN and new customers can bet just $5 on any team and get $200 in free bets instantly. If that's not enough action, you can place the same game parlay for a shot at an even bigger prize. For example, you can bet UNC to beat App State, but maybe you think it'll be a low scoring game, so you want to look at under 3 touchdowns. You can go ahead and do that. The possibilities are endless. DraftKings is a safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now using promo code TBPN. Bet $5 and get over $200 in free bets instantly. That's code TBPN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for terms and resources. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Tennessee, call or text Tennessee Redline at 1-800-889-9789. In New York, text HOPENY 467-369. One per new customer. Minimum £5 deposit and wager. $200 issued as $8 $25 free bets. Okay, now we are back. PJ Washington. It is eligible for a rookie extension. We just saw RJ Barrett get, what was it, 30 a year with the Knicks, which is which is interesting, considering that you would have thought he would have been one of the prime targets in the negotiations with the Utah Jazz for Donovan Mitchell, which we won't go into. We've done Mitchell pods before. We've talked about that. But it does kind of, I think, remind us all that actually that they can sign rookie extensions from now. Like, the deadline, yeah, is in October, but they can do it from essentially this offseason, the start of the new calendar year. So we've got pretty much like 5 to 6 weeks, and we're going to know if PJ Washington is going to be a restricted free agent or if he's going to be back in the Hornets long term. What are your feelings on this, Chase? How do you think this is going to play out? And I know some of it will depend on training camp and maybe preseason games and what they see from the team, but what's your gut at this moment in terms, like, do you think, first question, I guess, do you think they will come to an agreement before the regular season?
I would be very, very surprised if they come to a contract extension agreement before the regular season starts. I feel pretty, I mean, not that I'm happy about it, but I feel pretty strongly that he is going to kind of be in the same situation as Miles. Like, if they offer him an extension, it will be something that, you know, he probably doesn't want to take, and then it'll just play out into free agency, because I don't think that this front office is one to like necessarily bet against themselves with players that are hitting restricted free agency. Cause it's not like someone like Terry Rozier, who, when they extended him, like he would have been hitting unrestricted free agency. So there's no, you know, you have no team control over it. But if PJ Washington, no matter what offer he gets, even if it's better than the one you gave him, you still have the right to match it, which is what the same thing that they were going to do with the other power forward that they had on the roster that was going to restricted free agency this year. But yeah, I'd be pretty surprised if PJ doesn't have like the exact same like contract situation play out, just because, you know, it just doesn't seem like it's something that they're going to do. Like, not that they're not willing to extend them at all, but it doesn't seem like they do it like beforehand with like rookie contract guys yet. Cause they waited for like Devontae. I mean, they waited for Cody Martin. Like, they haven't gotten extended a young player early yet, I don't think, in this regime.
With everything with this, I know it's boring to say this, but it all does depend, I think, on the Bridges situation.
Yeah.
Whether they have clarity by October 17th, which is when the deadline for extension is, on where the Bridges situation might be going. If Bridges is, you know, going to be getting a lengthy suspension, okay, I don't know, and the team want him back, then I think I agree with you, it might play out that way. But if Miles Bridges is just off the team by October 17th, does a part of you not think that Well, he's now going to be in line for a starting role. He's going to be playing 30-plus minutes a night. That means his numbers are going to get bumped across the board because of the increased minutes. He's in a good environment with good players kind of around him that can help him excel. We just gone through the situation where we gave an extension offer to Miles. He rejected it. And now everyone around the NBA is laughing, or were laughing, at the, you know, 4 years, 60 million, which was reportedly offered, or 64 million. And that now with so much cap space going forward, if Bridges was completely off the roster, that and with the TV deal coming in, which even though there will be potential cap smoothing, I believe in 2020, in the summer of 2024, there is still going to be an increase in the cap, and there is going to be a sizable increase in the cap. Mm-hmm. So with all that in mind, you've just been through the situation before. The cap is going to be significantly increasing during a potential contract period, and you've got financial flexibility going forward. Do you not think there's a pretty strong case that they don't want to make the same mistake again?
Yeah, well, I mean, that actually is a pretty strong case. I'll give you that one. You're right. I think there is a good reason, because I feel like that's something that people forget when them like thinking about a lot of like young player like future contract extensions, is that the cap is just going to like continually rise. Players are going to keep making like more money. Like players lower down on the depth chart will be making, you know, double digit millions per year the further we go along. So maybe they will get something done here just because, and just bank on, you know, he hasn't gotten hurt that often, or like long-term injuries. It's all like, you know, sprained ankle or just like bumps and bruises kind of thing. And he's been pretty available. And I feel like they could bank on just be like, we at least know you're going to be a good role player for us. That's there. And then anything above that, you know, you're kind of outplaying this contract. So maybe you're right that they will kind of avoid making that mistake again and kind of just, you know, having like more holes on the roster every offseason than they did the last one.
Yeah, it's just with the situation that they might be in, because we still just don't know. Like you look at, here's a couple of other players who play the same position and similar situations. Larry Markkanen got 4 years, 67 million, right? Just over 16 and a bit per year. Jonathan Isaac got 4 years, 69 million back in 2020. A lot of them had injury protections on there, but they are kind of power forward slash, well, Larkin's not really, is not center at all, but are kind of power forward based players who are somewhat similar to PJ. But remember, if we were to sign an extension, it would not start until the summer of 2023, the 23-24 season. So he would only be playing on that extension for 1 year before that new TV money comes in. And at that point, you're talking about significant increase in cap space, more so than just like the 1 to 3 million. It kind of slowly creeps up a year. I think you'll be looking at like a 5 to 8 million jump. It's not going to jump by whatever it was, like 20 million last time the TV deal came in, and Kevin Durant went and signed with the Warriors, and Timothy Mozgov and Bismack Biyombo, they all got paid. It's not going to go ridiculous like that. The Wall Deng, shout out the Wall Deng. But
he's still getting paid by the Lakers, I think.
Yeah, it is still going to make quite a difference. Where would you, if you're PJ, what sort of money are you happy with?
So I was just going to ask you that, but I think that I was looking at the Hornets like current contract table right now. So I imagine it'll be something between 15 and 20, maybe, because you'll have Gordon Hayward at 31.5 for this season and next season, right? Yeah, season and next season. And then that's it. Terry is at the 23 approximately. He's got 74 million for the next 3 years. LaMelo is on his rookie deal, but is obviously going to be making a max as soon as that is a possibility for him. So I'd imagine that he is probably like the fourth guy, third or fourth guy in line in terms of like their yearly value on their contract. Because unless they have no plans to put a good team around LaMelo, they're going to replace that Gordon Hayward contract slot with someone else. Hopefully somebody that is like a young running mate for LaMelo, but I obviously we'll see in 2 summers from now. But I'd imagine he's probably like the fourth guy or fourth highest paid guy on the team. So something between 15 and 20 million dollars. And I would be perfectly fine with that. Especially like actually if the cap raises maybe like 17 to 22 instead of 15 to 20. But because I mean guys that are 6'7" defend or both front court positions and can at least reliably switch on to guards in a pinch, not somebody that's like a 1-5 positional defender, but he can hold up in a lot of different situations that certain, like, you know, 4 or 5 men can't hold up. He's basically a career like 38% 3-point shooter on 4 attempts per game. And on offense, he's also like a very underrated passer as well. So guys that with those skill sets fit in every single team and typically get paid pretty well because he's 6'7" and can really, really shoot. So that is a valued skill set in today's NBA. So I would be fine with, you know, what might seem like a lot of money for like probably the fourth or fifth best player on your team. If you're like a finals contender or the playoff run contender, but he's really good and he has a very valuable skill set too. And it's like Duncan Robinson made $95 million and he like can't even play defense in certain playoff situations. You would never have that problem with PJ. Granted, he's not as good of a movement shooter, but you know, he gives you a little bit more on both ends. So he's going to be paid well for his services, regardless of if it's the Hornets or not.
I think if I'm the agent, I'm asking for 20 per year straight, like from me. That's what I'm asking for.
Definitely. That would be me too.
You need to meet is at 20 per year. To kind of put that, like say, into context a little bit. Jeremy Grant is on like 20 per year. Aaron Gordon's 21.5 per year. John Collins got 25, which was a bit of a surprise. Then I think if you're Charlotte, you point to guys like Christian Wood and be like, well, he got 13. Kyle Kuzma, he's on 13. You know, Jonathan Isaac's on 17. So I think that's where, like that's the battleground right there. That's like 17 to 21 million, like you said. I think I would probably go there. The only thing that I do wonder here is that, like, PJ has been reported in trade rumors now for quite some time around trade deadlines. And if they are wanting PJ to be a centerpiece for a deal for Donovan Mitchell or another star-level player, if they're wanting to make that move very soon, if they've committed to that, then he's a lot harder to move once he signs extension because he essentially becomes a poison pill contract, which is what RJ Barrett has now become for the Knicks. And it makes him very difficult to trade with a package of picks and other players to another team. So if the Hornets are committed to, I don't know, let's just say that they say, we need to get another top 30 player on this roster by the end of the season, like no doubt, it would actually probably be easier not to extend PJ just because then he's much easier to trade from a salary point of view. But I don't think they will have a premeditated approach like that, but I think it's just worth something to note. I think I'd go up to 20 million. I think 20 million will become like, the way I view it at the minute, like 15 million is what you pay for like to start in the NBA at the moment. It's kind of a guide. And I think that by, you know, 2024, 25, 26, I think that'll be up to around that 20 million mark. And I think he's going to be a borderline, a respectable starting player or a great bench option. And that's what I think PJ will be. And that's why I think he should be paid like an appropriate starter level salary.
Agreed.
Okay. To finish off, Hornets over under. Currently it is at 36.5, which marks it to be in the East. The Wizards are at 35.5, the Pistons at 28.5, the Magic at 25.5, and the Pacers at 24.5. So essentially what they're saying is that the Hornets are going to finish towards the bottom of the Eastern Conference. I think this over-under has actually gone down as well since it originally came out.
I think it was 37 and a half, or may at least 37 and a half when it first came out.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't surprise me. What are our general overriding thoughts here with this over-under? But, you know, I don't want us to do our official predictions until we get a bit of sense of preseason and we get some kind of more clarity on the vibes around the team. But if you're betting money on this, which way are you swaying?
All right. So I feel pretty strongly about this too. And I don't even think it's a homer take. Like the 2021-22 Charlotte or 2021-22 Charlotte Hornets won 42 games, correct? I'm not remembering that incorrectly. I didn't even check.
Yep.
That's just right. Okay. So now with the subtraction of one player who played the entire season with the team, he averaged 20 points a game. And but seven. That's why it's that low. They and this is my other reasoning for that I'll get into after. So with the subtraction of one player that averaged 20 points, 7 rebounds, and 4 assists per game, they are going to be 6 wins worse than they were last season. With a little bit of an improved East, but still, it was good last season, and the Hornets went over 500. They were the best 10 seed in NBA history. I don't think that losing one player, again, and getting a coach that is going to improve their defense, which was easily the worst part of their team, and if Mark Williams is a playable center in his rookie year, you have the rim protector that you did not have, and he's 7 feet tall, and he's huge, and then you can play him, Plumlee, Kyle, whatever. You'll have a whole bunch more options that you didn't have last year in terms of rim protection and front court defense. There is no way that they're going to win 36 games or fewer if with just one player that went off this team. You cannot convince me that one player is worth 6 wins. And that is the reason that they're going to be like, go from like what would be like a 10 seed to probably like 12 or 13 at the absolute best. There's just no way. And the reason that I feel very strongly that it's this low because the people that set these odds either know or feel very strongly that that player will not be on the team this year or for the high majority of the season, at least, because there's no other reason to put it that low. What if there was a belief or they were at least being like, we don't know yet. We're going to assume that he's there until someone says that he's not. Why would it be that low? Like, why wouldn't it at least be like 40? Like being like, oh, the East got better. They'll lose like 2 or 3 fewer games. Why would it be such a dramatic shift? Other than if they lost somebody who was theoretically their second best player and now isn't there. But it's not like it was like, oh, he's the second best player, like Kyrie Irving to Kevin Durant. Like he didn't make an all-star team. Like he was good, but he's not an all-star. So I don't think he makes a 6-win difference. So that's my rant on that. I don't know if that's like me being like a homer.
I feel like I should stand up and applaud.
The crowd, the crowd behind me is clapping. If
after such a tumultuous offseason, for you to be so positive.
No, I don't think that I would hit the over but when it was like, I think it was 38 and a half, then I was like, I would like stay away from that. Because then you're being like 39, 40 wins is what they have to hit to win money. Then it's like, okay, I could see them winning 39 or 40 games. 36 is low. Like they only play 82. So 3 to 5 game swings is like, that's like a week and a half or 2 weeks of losses.
You've missed a good part of your argument as well, which you didn't even mention,
okay, here we go. Mention it for me. And then
this
I'll
is
say
to help
yes.
you.
I meant to say that.
A certain Mr. Hayward, who was injured for half of last season.
Okay, there we go. And I didn't even think of him. You're right. Yeah, that's another reason. Yeah. He's going to be bad. If you can't hedge your bet and be like, he's going to get injured. That's why we lowered it. Yeah, like they didn't do that the last two seasons.
With that said, I completely disagree.
All right, there we go. I know we needed that.
We're disagreeing a lot today. This is good. I think it'll be right around that number, so I actually probably wouldn't bet it, but I'd probably dip under. I just think the disaster potential for this team is massive. I think they are one injury away, one bad losing streak away from maybe firing a coach. I don't know if there is still, you know, they still haven't solved a lot of the issues, you know, the defensive issues. I don't think it's fair to just assume Mark Williams or a healthy Gordon Hayward are just going to come in and resolve the issues that were there. The only way I can see the Hornets comfortably beating this over is if LaMelo makes a major jump and he goes from being a player who's like, oh yeah, LaMelo is a good young player, to the Darius Garland level of play that he had last year, to the Trae Young level of play, like that, to go from being a good young player to like the undoubtedly number one option and able to lead and pull and scrape his team through to wins. And I think it could happen, which is why I wouldn't bet it, because I've said from very early on after watching LaMelo, you can't say what LaMelo can and can't do or what his potential is because of his physical and skill gifts that he has been given. But I do not feel great about it. I just think there is some bad juju on this team. And I'm just worried things can turn really sour here. And I know you said the East isn't like that much better, but I think Washington are going to have a healthy Bradley Beal and they've got Porzingis. I think that's big for them. Even like the Orlando Magic, they've just added Paolo, who looked absolutely fantastic. They've got Franz as well. You look at like Detroit, they've got more talented Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren. I know they haven't got Grant anymore, but like Cade, expect a big jump from him. So I think the bottom of the East has got some players who I expect to make a positive impact this year. And then the Knicks are sniffing around star players. The Cavaliers and Bulls have all made good moves. Like, I just don't see it. And I think like the Hornets' young players, the Buck Knights, the Kais, the Thors, the Williams, I've not seen anything in this through the summer league, or I will hopefully hear more in training camp. I'm not expecting a massive breakout, a Devontae Graham level breakout, a Miles Bridges level breakout from any of them. Buck Knight's unfair because we didn't see him in summer league. So he could have been one that we could have seen him in summer league and gone, it's coming for this guy. And I really hope it is. But I just feel like we're relying on a similar group of players. But like you say, we're missing a key cog in that. And yeah, so I'd duck under. I don't know if the off season from hell is bleeding over into now my regular season expectations for the team. Maybe it is, but maybe that's fair enough.
I think that is fair. I'm definitely not going to hold that against you. This has been a less than ideal scenario, or a less than ideal summer, I think, for us. And the situation heading into the regular season is bleak, which I wish that we like could do like a little bit of an early ish like thoughts heading into training camp, but like I literally like don't really have any. They don't have a roster that we talked about. They have 13 players on the team right now. Like there's so many players.
Yeah, I'm waiting to do a video series of like key position battles for training camp, but Miles Bridges affects so like every position because of the like the knock-on effect. Because if he is or is not on the roster, it like, well, then like Cody Martin and then JT Thor and Jalen McDaniels and PJ. It just makes, it's very hard to write anything right now because you're writing it normally assuming that Bridges isn't going to be on the roster. But I just think, yeah, I just pray for some clarity on September the 7th. I hope justice is delivered to those affected. I know it's not going to be, it's just a preliminary hearing, but I hope at least there is some clarity that enables the Hornets to move forward and go from this position of flex. And also us as analysts and podcasters, that we can start actually know what we're talking about going into the season. Some clarity for that would be great as well. I don't think it will be as clear as we probably want, if I'm being honest, because these things rarely move quickly and are clear. But we can only hope.
Yeah, and I'm really just kind of at this point, this is how low my expectations are at this point. I'm just waiting for like the like training camp guys, like guys that are going to get cut and go to Greensboro with the Exhibit 10, like the second two-way contract, because Arnold Skoboka is playing in Europe and Scotty Lewis has a broken leg right now. And then, you know, there's just so much like end of roster stuff to be done too, on top of finding out, you know, whether or not a player that is and was important to your team is even allowed to be like a member of society anymore. So there's just a lot that's going to go on. I feel between now and training camp, I think.
Yeah, this wasn't on the agenda, but Scott Lewis is actually an interesting case because, like, for him to receive medical treatment and to be in the Hornets training room and everything.
Yeah, they definitely want to keep him around.
He has to be on an NBA contract, right? Of some sort. And he's currently a free agent. So do you sign him to the two-way slot and essentially know that he's not going to play because of his injury? Or, like, what are the deal do they sign him to? They sign him to an Exhibit 10, even though he can't take part in training camp, and then they have his rights in Greensboro, and they rehab him for 1 year, and then kind of have, like, a kind of agreement in hand that they will put him on a two-way next year when he's back from the injury. With these one-year two-way contracts, I don't feel like they're just going to be like, oh, you broke your leg, you're now a free agent, good luck with your treatment. It doesn't feel like that's the way this will play out.
No, I don't. I you're probably right. And I think there are probably two options. And I do think they want to keep Scotty around. So I think he'll be back on that two-way at some point. And it was in July. So there's a chance that he can play in like maybe like February or March or something, depending on how severe it was. We really don't know, because the only update we got was that he broke his leg at a summer league practice. But I think the one option is just keeping it open and just having one two-way player until he's, you know, at least healthy enough to start practicing again, and then you sign him to it. He comes in and is rehabbing in your building and whatnot. And the other one would be to just sign another player to the open two-way spot, with like the caveat that, like, when Scotty Lewis is healthy, we will waive you. You can either like seek other opportunities with a two-way contract in the NBA, or join, you know, the Greensboro Swarm or something like that.
What does Scotty do in that situation in the interim when he is not signed?
He would probably just rehab, you know, with his agent or trainer, people that he does all that kind of stuff with.
I'd have to think the team wouldn't want him to do that. The medical staff would surely want. I know it's not up to the medical staff, but it'd be like doing a fifth of your recovery and then going away and then coming back. Like, if you're wanting to see the player again at the end of the injury, you want to be involved in the player recovering so you can track and monitor it every step of the way and give the right advice and kind of measure how it's healing. So I think it'll be fascinating to see how that plays out. I think it'll be interesting to see. And I just hope it doesn't play out in a way that means Scotty loses out on another year of two-way contracts and financials. I hope they're able to find a solution that works and is happy for all parties. Okay, that will do it for us. The next episode we'll be recording is September, with training camp fast approaching. So we will look forward to speaking again soon, and keep an eye on the All Hornets podcast feed. If you haven't already, can you give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts? That'd be great. Helps others find our podcast. There's a lot of good Hornets podcasters out there. Anything you can do to try and help us go a little bit higher in those standings so more people can find us and listen to us would be incredible. So make sure you hit that rate and review button on Apple Podcasts. But that is everything from me. Chase, good to chat to you. And we will speak again soon.
Good to talk to you again, my friend. Training camp will be here before we know it. A couple more weeks.
All right, let's do it. Bye.